Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your Wiretaps for Monday, July 27th, 2020. I'm joined, as always, by Alex Brown. How are things, Alex?
All good. Thank you, Graham.
Good, good. So a lot to talk about. Obviously, you've picked out some candidates for the usual Wiretaps portion here. There's kind of three ApplyWire folks. But before we get to that, I just wanted to give a few updates. And actually, the first one I have to mention right out of the gate is that we are running a kind of survey about this podcast. We want to hear from those of you who are regular listeners or even casual listeners to just figure out like what it is that you like about the podcast, what you'd like to see more of, less of, et cetera. And so we've got the survey in the field. I know I mentioned this last week, but we're going to leave it up in the field for a few weeks. And I'd love to have anyone that really enjoys listening or just anyone who kind of has familiarity with this podcast to fill it out. You can find the survey at bit.ly/clearadmitpodcastsurvey, all lowercase, all one word. So that's bit.ly/clearadmitpodcastsurvey. If you're like sitting at your desk right now, please just go and fill it out. I promise we'll take on board whatever feedback is given. It's just really helpful for us to know what everyone thinks and how it's going. So beyond that, Alex, I don't know if you saw, but we published this round one kind of deadlines calendar on the website last week. And it's awesome. I mean, this is, if you're applying to business school, this is such a useful tool because we've got every school's kind of first round or early action deadline. We tell you when you're going to find out about an admissions decision. And then we've also got information on whether that school has released their essay topics and whether or not the application is live. So whether or not you can actually start applying. And we've even like embedded links. So, you know, if, let's say Darden, you know, they have a deadline on the 2nd of September. Their essays have been out for a little while now, and we've got a link to our essay topic analysis for Darden. And on the, you know, application live side, it is live, and we have a link that takes you right into their application. So we've done that for all the schools. It's always just interesting to see where schools kind of camp out in terms of their deadlines. You know, you have schools like Harvard and Darden who are at the very beginning of September. But then you also have, you know, programs like Booth and Tuck who have kind of late September deadlines, or even MIT, you know, I think their first round is very early October. So important to look at this stuff. I know we'll probably talk more about it maybe in our admissions academy, but you know, it's important to know like when the deadlines fall too, because that may dictate how people work on applications. But did you have any words of insight on this stuff in terms of juggling deadlines?
No, but I mean, I think like you say, sometimes you go into your application strategy in terms of, you know, selecting which schools you're going to apply in the first round, which schools in the second round, and then all of a sudden you realize, you know, three of the schools' round deadlines are all in the same week, and that may ultimately impact how you split between rounds one and two if that's what you're going to do. So, yeah, looking at the calendar is super important to help build strategy. And yeah, it's kind of interesting, you know, MIT, generally, they do have an application deadline that's later than some of their peers. And maybe there's a strategy around that also from that school. So, yeah. Definitely a very useful resource, and folks need to examine it.
Yeah, and I've always wondered, I mean, there's always been a couple of schools that camp out in the midst of, like you're saying, where everyone else's deadline is. And I'm kind of like, if you're not the best ranked or the top school in the group, then you might be the one that gets kind of, you know, that loses application volume or gets kicked to the second round because of it. So it's interesting, but I encourage everyone to check out our deadlines calendar. Really useful, and just like to have everything in one place. The other thing I wanted to mention is last week we delivered the third class in our admissions academy. It's been great working with everyone who joins us for those classes. We have three more left, and I just wanted to mention that, you know, you can still sign up. And the three that we're doing, there's one on recommendations and how to, you know, choose and coach your recommenders to ensure that they're as supportive as possible of your candidacy. We also have a class that's going to be all about the data forms and resume and all the odds and ends that go into your application, aside from essays and recs and stuff. And then the final class is going to be on interviewing. And that'll be obviously a really important one, because hopefully many of you listening will be getting interviews, invited to interview, or even in some cases going to do, well, it'll be virtual this year, but do virtual interviews with schools that just allow you to, you know, sign up for them. So that'll be fun. Sign up. You can sign up on the ClearAdmit website to join the Admissions Academy. We've got a Facebook group going. I mean, it's really a nice group of students that have been joining us for these, and I've enjoyed it. And then the last thing I wanted to mention, Alex, is that we've got, we just continue to roll out our admissions director Q&As, and we caught up with Rodrigo Malta over at UT Austin McCombs. He's been in this, you know, in this industry for a really long time and always has interesting things to say. So I recommend people, if you have any interest at all in UT Austin, head over to the site, read the interview with Rodrigo. It's a you know, great piece. And I think we've also published a couple others. I think UC Irvine, they're just, we continue to roll them out, and we'll do so over the next several weeks, because we're trying to hit all the great business schools that take part on the website. So anything, Alex, going on in your world, like what's been happening on the wires, and are you hearing any interesting rumblings as people get closer to matriculation or application in the case of, you know?
Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, there's still a lot of activity on LiveWire and on DecisionWire. But basically what this all means is there's still a terrific amount of anxiety and uncertainty for those planning to matriculate in the fall. You know, some international students asking each other questions on, you know, the accessibility of doing the visa process and so on and so forth. Obviously, we've already talked about this Wharton and Stanford, you know, admitting quite a good number of folks off the wait list. So the anticipated domino effect as a result of that. We are seeing more folks getting admitted. I mean, this is unprecedented times, Graham. We've not seen this level of activity. What I would say is the conversation and the discourse is super upbeat and super helpful.
Yeah.
So folks are genuinely supporting each other because they're all kind of in the same spot in terms of uncertainty. Nothing specific to report this week in terms of a big school releasing a lot of waitlist decisions, but lots of persistent activity, lots of uncertainty. And frankly, Graham, we're what, the back end of July?
Yeah.
It's nearly time for these folks to be on campus.
Yeah, or at least to begin virtual preterms and stuff, depending on how schools are handling it. I mean, I talk to a lot of admissions directors just as a regular course here. And I think what struck me is just how they're still working to reel in the class of 2022, and they're facing challenges that they probably didn't anticipate. I mean, you know, luckily the U.S. government pulled back this idea that, oh, if you're virtual, then, you know, internationals can't come to the U.S. or even stay in the U.S. So that's been pulled back, but we're still, you know, a lot of embassies are closed. And so people are having trouble getting visas. And so even if a school is planning a hybrid approach or some portion in person, like it's been a challenge. And so, yeah, I really feel for the applicants and, well, the admitted students, I guess I should say, and the admissions officers who are kind of trying to piece this all together. But yeah, as you point out, we're getting there. It's going to be, you know, classes are going to start before you know it. So anyway, great conversation happening on the site, and definitely good place to go if you have questions and are just looking for others to commiserate with in these unusual times. So without further ado, should we dive in? You've picked out a couple of, actually three ApplyWire entries that we're going to go through. Anything else that you wanted to mention this week, though, before we dive on in?
No, I think we should get to it, unless you want to talk about the pet peeves of AdCom that we were discussing in our Admissions Academy last time. But I think we should kick on.
All right, sounds good. All right, so this is Wiretap's candidate number one. So this person is looking to start in the fall of 2021. They have three schools on their target list at the moment, and they are Duke, UT Austin, and Yale. The candidate's been working in the energy sector and has goals in a sort of slightly different domain. GPA of 3, I'll give you more details on that in a second though, and then 7 years of work experience They currently are located in, it sounds like they're in North Africa or have a kind of had an international career. And they mention, this woman mentions she's a female mining engineer from North Africa and has been working in the oil and gas industry for an American services company. Okay. And, you know, also mentions that, you know, aside from work, she's a blogger and a TV host and wants to, stay in oil and gas post MBA, but in more of a, I guess, work with an operator in kind of business and strategy. And, you know, she's kind of just wondering like what schools might be good to help her advance in the energy sector. And, you know, you had some dialogue with this candidate because of the fact that, you know, like you asked her about GMAT score and some other questions. And so I'll maybe let you kind of talk about her. But on the surface, you know, it jumps out at me, female mining engineer, North Africa, international kind of, you know, background in terms of working for an American company. Just interesting, you know, kind of profile overall. But then GPA is a 3. There's no GMAT here that I see. So what did you make of it? And what was the conversation you had with her?
Yeah, quite frankly, Graham, I think this is a potential superstar in the applicant process.
Really? Okay.
You did mention that the GPAs are 3. However, she did come back to us and say, actually, she's second in terms of her class rank.
Right.
So, you know, assumingly she's got an engineering degree, ranked number 2 in her class. I assume that you know, she's able to report that off of a transcript or whatever. That should be super helpful. I would hope that, again, as an engineer, ranked 2nd in a class and whatever, when she goes to take the GMAT or the GRE, prepares rigorously well and does very well in the test score. It's not guaranteed she'll do very well, but, you know, if she does very well in the test, I think there's just so much to like about this profile. Mining engineer, to me, that's a big positive. Female mining engineer, I think that's a bigger positive. Female mining engineer in North Africa, I think that's a bigger positive, in just in terms of what she probably is going to bring to the class.
Mm-hmm.
There's some really good stuff. She's also a blogger and a TV host. Whatever that means, I mean, I can say I'm a blogger. I've blogged a little bit. I haven't used my blog for a while. But, you know, I can't say I'm a TV host. And what is she using that? I mean, in terms of a TV host, she's using it as a platform. That's very interesting, too, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you're a podcast host, so that's not bad.
Yeah. Well, second in command co-host. How about that?
All right.
But no, I think super interesting. And, you know, she posted on ReplyWire simply asking, basically, what other schools should I apply that are going to help me sort of navigate my career in the oil and gas industry? And she's selected Duke, Austin, and Yale, which are all very, very good schools. Obviously, Texas School is sort of aligned in for oil and gas. So you've got, you know, any Texas school would fit that. But frankly, Graham, I think ace that test score and go for the very, very best.
I mean, yeah, I kind of have I'm of two minds with this candidate. So on the one hand, if she takes the GRE or the GMAT, maybe she can take it online if she can't get to a testing center, or, you know, soon hopefully those testing centers will open back up. But if she takes it and does well, then you say, wow, you know, second rank in class, tough engineering degree from a school that it sounds like, you know, doesn't really have the grade inflation that you see in the U.S. So if that's the case, then suddenly, yeah, this is a really interesting candidate. You know, the TV host and blogger piece, maybe there's, I mean, we'll get more insights on that as she gives us more detail here, but there's a lot of potential. And like you say, could be, you know, superstar type candidate. On the other hand, if she goes to take the test and really bombs it for one reason or another, then suddenly you start to think, okay, well, she was second in her class, but, you know, how good was the school? Or, you know, it's hard to go with a low GPA and a low GMAT. And if, you know, if it turns out that the TV hosting and blogging isn't as exciting as it could be or something like, so I kind of don't really know yet. But I feel like there is absolute potential here. And when it comes to the energy side, someone was kind enough in our community to mention, you know, oh, you could look at Rice or Wharton or Berkeley or even Oklahoma as a safety or something. Mm. So there was some good advice given What I would say is, I think it depends on what if she's interested in like renewables or anything that's kind of not just oil and gas, the California, like Haas might be a great place. Obviously Wharton's traditionally been really good in this area too, and as this person correctly pointed out who posted, Rice is a great option. It's in Texas, right? So kind of obvious too, right? But it's a good school and they excel in this domain. So yeah, I feel like she's going to cast, she should probably apply to more than three schools, and that the ones that have been offered up here are good ones to consider. It'd be great to know how the test goes, because that would help me decide whether, she should be looking at Wharton or Rice, right? So if she's going to add schools and stuff. But I do think there's a lot of potential here.
And not to forget, she's also noted in terms of her work. She's been identified as a rising star. She's got a promotion as a result of that, and so on and so forth. So there are indicators here that she falls into the strong end of the spectrum. I just hope that she's able to nail the test score. And that will potentially open up some fantastic opportunities. She just seems to have, a lot to offer, as well as obviously a lot of experience to gain from going to a top school.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And as you correctly point out, she had like 7 years of work experience in this domain. And so she would be an asset in the classroom for sure. I will say, I mean, depending on how the test goes, like I wouldn't rule out like HBS either. You know,
No.
I mean, there could be. So again, we'll see how it sort of works out for her. And it'd be great if she could, maybe throw in some more detail as she learns more about her test and everything on ApplyWire. We can continue to dialogue with her. But really appreciate the post. And yeah, wish her all the best of luck. I think there's a lot of potential.
And I guess my biggest piece of advice is don't limit your opportunity by not looking at the very best.
Yeah, agreed. All right, so let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person's applying to seven schools, hoping to start again in the fall of 2021. The schools are Berkeley, Michigan, MIT, Kellogg, Chicago, UCLA, and Yale. They've been working in economic consulting prior to business school. This is a international Asian male, they mentioned in the comments. They want to get into tech post MBA, and they've listed all the usual suspects. I'll just run through a few, but there's kind of Amazon, Facebook, Google, LinkedIn, Microsoft. So you name it, they're interested in many of these kind of big tech companies.
They mentioned Twitch. Did you have to look it up, or did you know Twitch?
I don't even know. I don't even know what Twitch is. I mean, I think I've heard the name, but do you know?
Yes, it's a whole, well, not a whole new social media, but it's a platform that people use to watch other people playing online gaming and so forth. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating, I think.
Interesting. Okay, that's cool. Yeah, I'm not a video gamer, so I did not know that. But that's, yeah, so this person definitely, they have their eyes on all the key tech companies. GMAT score, I said 720, GPA 3.8. They've had 3 years of work experience, and they're in New York, and they would love to either be in New York or the Bay Area after business school. So, and as I said, international Asian male, they indicated that they're kind of at a natural endpoint, or will be at a natural endpoint in their current job. I guess the 4 year mark, they kind of said that, analysts either move to something new or go get, an MBA or another degree. So, because they can't be promoted without doing so. So they feel like now is the right time. And yeah, I mean, there's, on the one hand, the GPA is really stunning. The GMAT is, it's okay. But what did you make of this candidate? Because they went into some detail on their career goals, and I know you had some dialogue. So what do you make of this person?
You're pretty harsh about these 720 GMAT scores,
Well, I'm
right?
kind
I
of
mean, I think
combined.
okay is a little.
No, I mean, I think it's a good score, but I'm cognizant of the fact that this person may be falling into a bit of an overrepresented portion of the pool. So, but anyway, I'll let you. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I guess in economic consulting, they're in a spot where, folks aren't just going off for an MBA. It could be a PhD track or other masters in that sector. So they're moving on, moving out. I like the idea that they're interested in sort of, policy meets technology, and they're looking in, and this idea of online harassment and moderation and how all that is, because obviously that's a super hot topic right now.
Yeah.
In terms of hate speech and various other things. So that, to me, that's kind of stood out in terms of their interest, and if they can back that up with stuff that they've already done, I think that would be very good. I reckon this person's super smart. They work in economic consulting. They typically have kind of rocket science type folks working in those sort of highly analytical roles. I'm sort of speculating and guessing that's the type of role that they're in, and so forth. So the question to me is, that perhaps this person's a little bit of a nerd type, Asian male, whatever. So could get stereotyped and be put into that sort of bucket of potentially overrepresented candidates, which would put pressure on him to then, make sure they apply in the first rounds and so on and so forth, to sort of maximise their opportunity. But then I'm reading a little bit more, and they do, their interest and passion outside of work is solo figure skating.
Yes.
So that, to me, kind of destroys the stereotypical, makeup of what I thought this person was, who I thought this person is, right? Not that we should stereotype folks, but at the end of the day, it is what it is. So I just thought it was quite interesting that their interest and their passion, if it is a passion, is quite unusual. And I would say maybe even a little bit more unusual for this demographic, Asian male, and whatever. So, I reckon if this person is a very successful solo figure skater, i.e. they've gotten awards and they compete and they've done very well. Obviously, they've told us during COVID-19 all their competitions have been derailed, and that's absolutely understandable. But it would be interesting if they're doing really well in this domain, complementary to what they do at work in that, then to me, this candidate becomes a little bit more interesting, Graham.
Agreed, yeah. The figure skating thing definitely jumped out at me. I know it's silly, right? Because you get these, you look at a candidate and, most of it's going to be about academics and work experience, and et cetera. But just to see, just something that'll jump out and be memorable. We talked about this actually in our admissions academy about essays, and something that you can kind of grab onto as an admissions reader and, this is the analyst who's the figure skater, as opposed to just the analyst who, does something that everyone else does in their free time.
Yeah.
So yeah, I agree. It seems like there's a lot of potential here. I mean, obviously I'm impressed with the GPA. I think that schools on the margin like a high GPA and a kind of, solid GMAT as opposed to maybe the other way around. I think this person, and they have a good head on their shoulders. Clearly they know, look, I'm going to do my 4 years there. I need to make a move. They have some good ideas. And so I think there's a lot of possibility for this candidate. What did you make of the school selection? I mean, I think that's another thing where, in my mind, they have a decent balance here, but you're comfortable with this list? I mean, based on their goals and...
Yeah, I think they have a decent balance. They've got M7 schools in here, like Sloan, Kellogg, Chicago, and then they sort of back that up with the next tier down, Haas and Yale, and then Anderson's in there behind that, I suppose, slightly behind or whatever. So I think that's good, but again, I'll go back to this solo figure skating. If it's a big deal, like how does someone get into solo figure skating? If they're ending up writing an essay about it and this, that and the other, does that then, I mean... Should this person be taking a punt at one of the top three? I mean, I don't know. I mean, if they end up getting admitted to, the M7 schools they applied, then they're going to wonder, should I throw my hat in at Stanford or Harvard or whatever it might be? And it could be the other way around again, too. I mean, again, because they're kind of like from an overrepresented group, it's like, well... They could blanket the M7 schools, and maybe it's the next tier down that they get success at. I do find this candidate really hard to analyze, quite frankly, Graham. It's one or the other, but I can't figure it out.
Yeah, it's kind completely. Of completely. Yeah, I hear you. I mean, they fall into a lot of the kind of overrepresented boxes or whatever. But then there's some things that could help them stand out. So, I mean, I would say right now they have a nice range of schools. Yeah, you do raise that question of whether they should throw in, you know, one or two that are even a bit higher up.
I mean, I'm a big believer, unless you've been admitted to Harvard, Stanford, or Wharton, or even you could just make the case Harvard and Stanford, unless you've been admitted to one of those two, if you get admitted to all the schools you apply, you just didn't apply high enough.
Right. You hate to see someone waste the chance of getting, So, good feedback. Well, let's hope they take that to heart.
Yeah, and I would just like to know more about the solo figure skating. And if it's a little bit of a hobby and they've just started it, then it's probably nothing to focus your application strategy on. But if it's something that they've been doing since they could walk and they've, been, successful and pushed and they've had to overcome a lot of stuff to make it happen, and, various other things, then this could be a really interesting piece of the application. And tell a lot about the individual character. That's kind of, I guess, what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, that's good feedback. I think we'll see, only they know. But obviously, if they want to follow up on ApplyWire and give us more color and kind of context. But I think, this could go either way. And hopefully they apply to a range of schools for that very reason. All right, so let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this person's applying to 6 schools and wants to start in the fall of 2021. They're looking at Berkeley, Dartmouth, Harvard, Michigan, Stanford, and Yale. And they've been working pre-MBA in a D2C startup. Did you have to look that up, Alex, or you knew what it meant?
Direct to consumer.
There you go, all right. and they want to go post-MBA into, entrepreneurship or maybe nonprofit social impact. GRE score is 328, GPA 3.51, this person's had 3 years of work experience, located in Detroit, and is hoping to get to the West Coast after business school. And I should mention that the poster started off their note, this must be why you picked them, with a comment that said, ClearAdmit has been so helpful as I've gone through the research process. And so, then they went on to talk about how they're wondering if they're reaching absurdly high or if they're kind of in the right ballpark. This is a woman, very strong, kind of, she claims it's kind of trendy to be working in this kind of direct-to-consumer startup domain. She does brand marketing. She's had, a lot of experience with small teams at growth stage businesses. She kind of mentioned she wears many hats, even though she recognizes that's a bit of a cliche. And she also has a lot of good extracurriculars that she mentions involve, like design thinking, entrepreneurship, women's issues. So, in my view, this person has a really good head on her shoulders. And I thought that the way that she described her background and her, her candidacy and what she wants suggests that she's a strong, communicator as well. But she points out that she's kind of a liberal arts grad with not a ton of math kind of in her background. And, I think she mentioned that she'd done like a couple of math type classes like stats and research methods in college, but she also got a C in a calc class freshman year. So she's nervous about being a kind of liberal arts grad working, wearing many hats in a job that's not like super analytical necessarily, although she's done some work on big data stuff. But so she's worried about what are schools going to say? And she mentioned that she's taken a class through the Berkeley Extension program that's a quant class and that it's going well and is wondering is that going to be enough? So what did you make of this? I know that you kind of threw her right over to me and then when you left a comment, but do you have any thoughts on her just out of the gate here?
Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, Graham, again, I guess we're just profiling terrific people today. This person does sort of check all the boxes in terms of, she might be slightly a little bit different. She's got the liberal arts degree, yet she's doing really interesting stuff in that sort of D2C startup space. Her GRE score, the overall 328, that's a very, very, respectable score. 3.5 GPA, very respectable. So she's smart. She has this concern about slightly lighter on the quant side, 160 on the GRE. Indicates that the quant might be a little less you know, as good as the verbal, obviously, but still, it all looks fairly decent. She seems to be doing the right, taking the right steps in terms of taking the extra coursework and so forth. And you know, as a liberal arts major who ended up ultimately getting admitted to two of the three best schools in the country, and so forth, Graham, you have direct experience with this type of candidacy, and
yeah,
she seems pretty strong to me, Graham.
Yeah, no, I think she's, first of all, I don't think she's aiming too high. I think she's clearly taking some steps to help mitigate the slightly weaker percentile score on the quant and the lack of extensive quant coursework on her transcripts. I actually guessed in my comment to her that C that she got was in calc, which she then confirmed. So that's not great, because calculus is viewed as one of those like foundation, you know, courses. But she's taking a class right now that I believe is probably covering some of that. It's like a math for management type class. So I think she's doing the right things. The question that I had raised was maybe she should take a second class, and ideally it would be calc or accounting or something very foundational. She mentioned that the price point could be a barrier for that. I guess she's a little nervous about that. And the only thing I would say on that front is that, you know, from where I sat when I was doing admissions, I always used to sort of feel like if you're about to potentially drop, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to go to business school, even if you're going to get some financial aid, it's going to be, you're foregoing wages. I mean, there's a huge cost to going off to getting an MBA. You know, if we're talking about, you know, I don't know, hundreds of dollars to take a class or something, I don't know. I sort of feel like if she has time and can continue to bolster that piece of her profile, I would do it, especially if she wants to really fish in the top end of, you know, her current target list, like Stanford or Harvard.
Yeah.
I just want the schools to be absolutely certain that she'll, you know, pass through the kind of quantitative maze that is that kind of first quarter, first semester of business school, and kind of come out the other side and, you know, flying colors. So, but I, you know, this is, I'm kind of being nitpicky. But
So let me put this back on you, Graham. How tough for you was that first quarter coming from a liberal arts background?
You know, it would have been a nightmare if I hadn't done the, so I actually did what she's doing, right? I took, I think I took stats and accounting, right, this, you know, in the application season, as I was applying to business school. If I hadn't done that, I think I would have been in real trouble, because, you know, I would have showed up at business school with no idea like what accounting even was. And stats is really important too. So that was really helpful. I had taken calc in college, so I was more comfortable with that. By the way, I too had gotten a C though. So that's why I had gone out and taken some additional quantitative coursework. I think, you know, at the end of the day, my undergraduate education prepared me for the rigors of business school. I didn't find business school to be like awful or anything, but I just think that having gotten back, even taking the GMAT was helpful, like just reawakening all that like high school math stuff that you haven't touched. If you're like a liberal arts, you know, student and you're not doing any business or econ and you're just, you know, doing, I think she was poli sci and I was art history, right? So if you're just doing that stuff, the act of taking the GMAT, the act of taking a class in stats or accounting is really great to prep you for your arrival at business school. And then you couple that with the preterms that all these top schools offer and you're fine. Like, I think if you're smart, you can survive business school. It's more about quantity and having the time to do it all than it is about the actual, like, oh, this is like way beyond my ability academically or something. It's just more, they give you so much to do and it's fast, right? So anyway, so I mean, I think she's a great candidate, and the 328 will jump off the page. It's a great score, even though the math is a bit weaker for her, but still, that's a really high score. So I'm not worried about it.
Yeah. There is I don't know which thread it's under in terms of on Livewire, but there's a pretty interesting conversation about taking MBA math and actually how many hours of work cutting through the MBA math program is. And, you know, several are reporting, you know, they had to do 20 hours of work, 30 hours of work, depending on their background. But clearly, if you're doing that amount of work in preparation for business school, that's going to ease your transition for that first quarter.
Right.
So it's not just, you know, for the sake of jump excuse me, jumping through hoops for the AdCom, but they want you to be truly successful. And that first quarter is generally, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong here, Graham, but it's generally the most hectic academically to sort of get you up to speed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So the more help you can get in preparation of that, the greater experience you'll have, integrating into that MBA community.
Agreed. Yeah. And it's, I don't know why. And I think they've eased back off of this in recent years and allowed people to spread things around. But, you know, MBA programs at all the top schools have just traditionally been front loaded with a lot of quantitative coursework. So that makes, can make it challenging. But again, I think this person will be fine. Like I really think she has a great candidacy. And so I just want to make sure that she's leaving like no, that there's no, cause for concern. And so obviously taking the one class, showing them that she's taken it and ideally gets a good grade in it may be sufficient. I'm just thinking that if even just mentioning that she's also going to take class X, maybe she starts it up once she's got her applications in or something, but just showing them that she's really working towards being ready for business school, that may go a long way as well. That's kind of the third candidate here. I guess we're kind of at the end of our episode this week. They fly by for me. I did want to mention one last time that we are running this survey. Would love to hear from all of you as to what you like about the show. Just go to bit.ly/clearadmitpodcastsurvey, all lowercase, all one word, and fill out the survey. It'll literally take you like 3 minutes. But Alex, thanks so much for picking out these three candidates, and thanks to the candidates for sharing their background. I think it's so instructive to just hear the real stories of candidates, and I think it helps everyone that's listening to kind of adjust their own approach. So appreciate it, Alex.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, and good luck, everybody, and stay safe.
All right, we'll see you next week.